We're here with absolutely one of my great favorites on the Congressional Corner, David Hawkins, who's the expert's expert as editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call, author of the Hawkins Here blog and column. He's covered Congress in various positions at CQ, the Bible of anybody who wants to know about Congress, since 1995. Okay, David Hawkins, we were talking the last time we met up here about the Supreme Court nomination. One of the people that is being most talked about is Harry Reid. We talked about him last time. Harry Reid, the outspoken leader who presaged Chuck Schumer as the leader of the Democrats. He said, okay, when he was the leader, anyways, the majority leader, let's go to the nuclear option for the federal courts. And I believe you said, in retrospect, that may have been a mistake.
Well, I think it was. I think they're ruining the day, the Democrats. Many of them are. Ruining the day that Harry Reid opened the door. You know, he threw the first bomb, or, you know, to torture the nuclear metaphors a little bit too much, right? He dropped the first bomb, and so generally the guy on whom the bomb was dropped wants to retaliate, and so sooner the opportunity for the Republicans to retaliate has now happened, and the price that they are going to pay for Reid's decision, the Obama seat on the Supreme Court, is now going to go to a very conservative Republican. I mean, that's the price they're going to pay.
Okay, now
they did get some stuff along the way.
He's followed. Oh, you mean the Democrats?
Oh, Obama
did,
and Reid did get some victories out of this.
Sure, absolutely right. That's right. Reid goes away, and Chuck Schumer becomes the head man in the Democratic Party in the Senate, which is in the minority. How's he doing?
Well, I think he's doing as best as he can. If the idea is to form a solid wall of resistance at every turn, Chuck Schumer has said all the right things about being willing to work with Donald Trump. If there's ever an opportunity to work with him, they're not going to just reflexively not work with him. And then he has sat by and watched as Donald Trump has done and said things that no Democrat would ever contemplate collaborating with. Chuck Schumer, in the end, is going to hold 44 of his 48 fellow Democrats together on this filibuster of Judge Gorsuch. Only four of the 48 are breaking with him. So in terms of having party leadership muscle, he's doing well. He's very good in front of the cameras. People used to joke about Chuck Schumer being, you know, the most dangerous place to stand in the Capitol was between Chuck Schumer and a TV camera. That joke has gone away. Chuck Schumer is quite disciplined now when he goes to the cameras, but he's punchy. He seems more reasonable than Harry Reid did at the end. Harry Reid, in the last couple of years, you know, I have to say, really got this reputation of being sort of all about combativeness and pugilism first, and about, you know, talking sense and the facts second. Ever since he made up, you know, he basically fabricated things about Mitt Romney and his taxes, and after that it was kind of downhill. So Schumer is off, I think, to a solid start in terms of holding his Democrats together and forming a simple, non-histrionic resistance to Trump.
I've taught congressional courses a number of times in my long, long life, but a lot of people don't understand one thing. If it takes a filibuster to end a filibuster, it takes the 60 votes, then wait a second now. How does the leader come along and create a scenario where he says, I'm pulling the nuclear option? I've told them, and I hope I'm right, that there's a difference between procedure and substantive debate, that the leader has the right to, the majority leader has the right to come in and do that. Am I wrong?
You're wrong-ish. I don't want to say you're wrong, but it's, I mean, this is too down in the weeds, you know, even for you and I, if we were sitting around having a drink. There is a very complicated parliamentary maneuver that involves essentially getting rulings from the parliamentarian and therefore the presiding officer, who will be a member of the majority party, that essentially says, I now say that we're going to change the rules so that there is no 60-vote threshold. And then there's, that ruling gets appealed, and then there's a vote to overrule the appeal, and it's like a nine-step process. But in the end,
it may be nine step, but I don't. It may be nine step, but I don't think I'm wrong. In other words, that's a procedural way of doing it, whereas the filibuster involves stopping some legislative process from going forward.
In theory, it's supposed to take 67 votes to change the rules of the Senate. So what this parliamentary process that I just half-heartedly described does is break that 67 vote threshold. So that's why Mitch McConnell, when the shoe was on the other foot, he kept saying until he was blue in the face that Harry Reid wants to break the rules in order to change the rules. So that's what that was all about. Now, it's also the case that the majority leader can't do this unilaterally. He's got to get his own ducks in a row. And McConnell, has to make sure that he's got at least 50 votes plus Mike Pence ready to vote this way. When Harry Reid did his nuclear option, he actually lost three or maybe four Senate Democrats, did not go along with him, and he barely got this done.
And that leads to my next question. I've often taught students about leaders saying to somebody who's facing a very competitive race the next time out, oh, yeah, I know if you vote with me on this, you'll lose, so I'm going to let you off the hook. But the other guys have to stay in the tank. So there, as you mentioned before, there are four who have deserted Schumer in order, you know, to say that they were going to vote for Gorsuch. So my question for you here is, do you think this is collusion, or do you think they do this in spite of what the leaders are telling them to do?
Well, yeah, collusion. Collusion sounds like it's, you know, it's inappropriate. But, yeah, I mean, Chuck Schumer knows how to count votes. And he knows once he knew that he had the 41 votes that he needed to stop to launch this filibuster, he went a little bit easy on the remaining four or six or seven or whatever it was. There was right. So 48. Once he got 41, then he presumably went to three of the four who were going to vote against him are Democrats in deep red states and running for re-election in deep red states, states that voted not only for Donald Trump in 16, but for Mitt Romney in 12. Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, and Joe Manchin of West Virginia. So all three of those Democrats already have voting records that make them among the most conservative Democrats in the Senate, and being able to show some independence from the Democratic leadership makes sense for them politically and will help them win re-election, which will work to Chuck Schumer's advantage in the long run. So once Schumer is assured of being able to do what he wants to do, yes, he went to those three and said, you can vote your conscience and I won't be mad at you. Very few of these votes happen by like 60 to 40. Generally, once the dam has been cracked, then many more people vote the way that they want to vote.
Okay, let's stay with that for a minute and ask you this. Really, if they really ticked off Schumer and he really wanted them to stay, does he have any real clout in the United States Senate to say to them, I'll discipline you somehow if you don't stick with me?
You know, less clout than he used to. I mean, the nature of the way Congress works is fundamentally different than when, you know, Lyndon Johnson was being photographed in those famous pictures of him leaning in and you know, basically tapping the chest of a little tiny senator from Rhode Island and getting him to basically lean back with fear. It doesn't work that way anymore. So what can Schumer do or McConnell really do? There are some things. I mean, there are some, you know, there's fundraising help or not lack of help. There is there are committee assignments. There are even lesser things like you know, good office space in the Capitol. But you know, the ability of a floor leader to actually apply pressure is less than it once was. The big thing that has been taken away is earmarks. Those who pay attention to Congress know that earmarks, which was the polite way of talking about pork barrel spending, that used to be the coin of the realm. That the leadership would say, look, if you vote with me this way and you really want that two-lane road that goes from your hometown down to the interstate turned into a four-lane road, you got it. And now they can't do that anymore. They have forswore such pork barreling, and that makes a leader's job much more difficult.
That's a verb, pork barreling. Well, it's always great to talk to our great friend David Hawkins, the man without socks, who is the editor of Congressional Quarterly Roll Call, author of the Hawkins Here blog and column, covering Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995. And as you hear, the guy who really does know more about Congress than just about anyone else. Thanks, David. When we come back the next time, let's talk lots of things.
Thanks, Alan.